All right, so some New Year's thoughts. First, wow, nice morning. Never want to miss another sunset again. Think off the grids. Just bought yourself some good ass weightlifting equipment. All merino wool, everything. In Jinji toe socks, Vibram five fingers, simple down vests. Get yourself right. New Year's resolutions means new place, new use. We off the grid for my kids. So actually the funny thing too is I've actually noticed both my neighbors, one has an Audi Q3 and one actually has an Audi A3. Both of them are in service. They have all these courtesy vehicles. So yeah, don't get a Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche, Lamborghini, Bentley, whatevs, all owned by the Volkswagen group. They're always in the shop. Yo, check out my Prius Bulldozer edition. And actually the funny thing too, so my sister-in-law, my sister Jennifer, she just got a new Prius. Looks super cool. But actually the funny thing is the new Prius, right? The one that looks like a 911 from the back with the straight taillight. It actually has a way smaller trunk. And I'm like, dude, this is like, I'm like starting to appreciate the 2010, yeah, matte black. 20 Prius is matte black. Been a Prius till I die, right? So, Kintsugiri, okay? So, yeah, hatchback is best, and yeah, actually, still waiting on my black and yellow, license plate. It's a long lead time, but anyways, so yeah, like, I treat this like my Prius truck, the Prius Cybertruck. It fits so much stuff in the trunk. It's ridiculous. Like, we got Sen's bike, some cleaning supplies, etc. And I think just kind of keep it open, just off the grid lifestyle. So anyways, so I think all this is so critical because, okay, first and foremost, people send an insane amount of money on their cars. Foolishly, like, my pride and joy is, in my whole adult life, I've never spent more than, how much? I've never spent more than, perhaps, I've spent money to repair cars, but I've never spent more than, what was my last car? Mazda Miata. Let me check out the Miata. I think I got the Miata, the 1990 Miata, when I was in college, my senior year. Like $3,500 US. Craigslist, sounds about right. So my whole adult life, have never spent, I'm 35 right now, born in 88. Never spent more than $3,500 USD on the car. And also the thing with the Prius truck, got that for $399. It's good. Actually, the funny thing too is that, like, everyone wants to live a better, happier life, what is, right? And actually, the big benefit of just having, like, beater ass, right, is that, so, like, for example, me and Sen, we go to nature all the time. We go hikes on pretty much every day. The Stoneview Nature Center, the Baldwin Hills Overlook. And the funny thing is actually, so these fucking floor mats, right? I had to scrub them clean, right? Because it got super dirty. And then, like, sooner or later, you have your kid, have a kid. Even if you just have a dog or just yourself, you know, you're gonna trash your car sooner or later anyways. So even having to maintain your car and keep it clean is like an effing full-time job, right? So as a consequence, and you know, sooner or later, your kid's gonna throw up in the car and stuff. It seems that a lot of these people who's wasting car money is on the brand new cars. Seems like kind of a foolish decisions. Actually, these balancing bikes, great. We get from the Facebook Buy Nothing groups. And actually, maybe a fun thought for the New Year's is, just see how long you go without buying new shit. If anything, actually, the most robust thing to do in terms of just workflow and life and everything in between is trying to figure out shit to get rid of or what to subtract from your life rather than what to add. And I'm, you know, and then actually my sister Anna, she always jokes. She's like, you know how you know you made it in life? When you see free furniture on the side of the road and you don't even look at it. It's a pretty good one. And actually I'm at this point too, right? Where it's kind of like, I don't like getting free shit no more because several things. One, it feels like there's an obligation for you to use it, and I'm like super anal about my things, my possessions, etc. And two, I think the problem is, when you're super anal about shit, right? You have strong tastes. And my personal definition of an artist is somebody who just essentially has very, very strong tastes, right? Like, who has very, very strong preferences. I call it like visual OCD or visual, being visually anal about things. And yeah, so that's my thought. Also, the good thing too, ultimately, we're all artists, right? So the greatest joy is not buying something brand new or whatevs. It's actually to modify it and clean it and to do cool shit yourself. And so what that actually means is it's better to just get a beater ass car and then just do a ghetto spray paint job, matte black it, whatevs on the rims and shit, right? Rather than buy a nice ass new brand new car where you feel like you can't modify it, you can't debadge it because you're afraid that you're gonna break shit. So yeah, the benefit of a beater, and also I have like my BDS iPhone SE. Actually, it's funny because it got all scratched up and shit because I accidentally let some other random kids play with it, right? And yeah, they're not as well trained as Sen. So as a consequence, they just kind of rubbed it everywhere the wrong way. And as a consequence, yeah, it got super dirty and whatevs. But alas, yeah, keeping shit clean is pretty critical. So some other thoughts I had this morning was, okay, this is the facts, right? Low key, man, most people, bro, like, they live in filth, right? Like, simple ways to think about it, right? So you get to really know somebody or who somebody is, whatevs, based on like once you go to their home, their residences, etc. Just go to the kitchen, go to the bathroom, go to the living room, bedroom, etc. Right? If they keep the place like effing pigsty, right? Their mind is also going to be like kind of a metaphorical pigsty as well. So as a consequence, right? As a consequence. Yeah, don't trust nobody but yourself. And yeah, so some other, you just gotta, so funny too, like the easiest way to just keep shit clean, just kind of like give it a wipe. I see like limo drivers do this all the time when they're just kind of bored, they just kind of wipe down their car just to kill time. It actually seems like a surprisingly effective strategy. And just cheaper than getting a car wash all the time, right? And every once in a while, you could just wring this out, let it dry in the sun. The things I'm so grateful about being in SoCal, I mean, it gets colder in the wintertime, but like never that cold. So if you're in the Bay Area, the East Coast, Boston, yeah, come out to LA, vibe out with me in the Culver Cities is the best place to be. So, yeah, so some thoughts. So I think thinking about this New Year's resolutions, what is, right? Yeah, just be a negative, just don't buy new shit. And then it, like, it's funny too, because it's like one of those things, not like there's any moralistic evil or bad behind buying stuff. It's just kind of like, I almost feel like the new elitism is the privilege to not buy new stuff, right? And now, especially that we have all this like cheap shit on Amazon, right? I don't know, like, even like buying a new iPhone, it's just like so much like hidden management, right? And then you gotta like find a new cables and boxes, like even the new iPhone is the USB-Cs that everyone was like wanting and asking for, right? Because I gotta get new chargers for my car and shit, right? So yeah, in fact, the will to simplicity and the will to deletion, I believe, is actually far more robust. Why is it that everyone wants the new thing? This is my personal theory. I think it's an interesting theory. So when you buy something new, we think we become something new, right? So everyone's so excited once you buy a new car, right? So I think the logic behind buying a new car is, my adage is, tell me what you drive and I'll tell you who you is. And so people's cars are essentially their external avatars, right? So the reason why I never trust nobody who drives an Audi, a Volkswagen, or a German car, or a Porsche, whatevs, is it's signaling some sort of deep insecurity behind things. Even like dudes drive these like big ass pickup trucks and lifted and MGG wagons, y'all bunch of losers. Real men drive Priuses. And I think it's straight up like Prius is like really, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Elon Musk, Tesla, you know, have a bunch of stock. Good morning. And as a consequence, so I love the innovation and stuff like that. But pragmatically speaking, I wouldn't actually myself drop all that money on Tesla, because even doing some research, so fun facts, right? Like, if you're thinking about buying Tesla and you're not sure you want to do it, right? Just go on Craigslist, right? And look at all these people dumping the Teslas. And even, I always walk by the Toyota dealership, right? And at the Toyota dealership, all these people are trading in their Teslas for Toyotas? And I'm just like, what? I mean, even Cindy's dad, right? He bought a brand new Tesla Model Y, the long range one, right? He's like, oh, so you know how you like it? Is your life changing stuff? It's like that, that, that. It's like, yeah, I thought it'd be a lot more like kind of a luxury car, but actually it feels pretty cheap. And the truth be told, right? The appeal of the Tesla is, I call it like utilitarian or Spartan luxury, is that the luxury isn't that the materials and the quality of the things is good, but rather the new privileges of like for example self-driving, full self-driving. I mean, my thought is the true killer, or the true reason to get a Tesla, is actually not for the electric car component, but the full self-driving car component. And then I think even the best way to think about Tesla is essentially Tesla as an AI company. It's a data company, and AI is going to take over the future. The will to minimalism is a good idea. So yeah, y'all curious? Get the GoPros minis. Voice dictation and the iPads Pros, good. The will to minimalism. I believe the superior path in life is towards and for minimalism, period. The more minimal, the better, period. Eric Kim, minimalism philosophy. So this is gonna be the future. Just ChatGPT yourselves. Yeah. Known for its contributions in the fields of photography and philosophy. Copy that. Side view. Yeah, so I think ChatGPT's is the ultimate blogging, augmented, publishing thinkings. Is that people are like, oh, ChatGPT's cheating. I'm like, anybody who says something about cheating is like, y'all is uncritical. Search his quotes on minimalism. You're. Yeah, actually, I found that 99.99% people insanely, insanely basic thinkers. Even the smart ones, even though you got a PhD or you came out of Yale or Harvard, UCLA, UC Berkeley, Brown, whatevs, people like what they call criticality. Criticality. Well. In number form. I like numbers. My personal thought is minimalism isn't some sort of self-abnegation, comma, or some sort of weird self-flagellation period. Rather, it is a new elite way of thinking period. Eric Kim quotes on minimalism in number form. So yeah, ChatGPT is the future. The second it goes public, if in a boom. Sonic boom. Jumpman. Yeah, who's the best rapper alive? Future. Yeah, okay. So continuing the thoughts. Yeah, so these rings are super litty. I think actually what I enjoy most about the GoPro minis is all these funny unorthodox ways to do it. I'm just using the cheap Titan Fitness. This seems to work fine. Whatevs. The funny thing too is it's like grab and go. I actually think that more weightlifters, powerlifters, whatever should do calisthenics, and also more calisthenics people should do weightlifting. Everyone puts themselves into like a weird cult category, and this is why I don't trust no CrossFitters and people, anybody who puts a label on themselves. Like, I think actually the most robust term to refer to yourself is just weightlifter, right? Like, how'd you get so strong? Did you swimmer? I'm not. Oh, just weightlifter. It's like weight, like shit, right? And I just like to lift it. Yeah, super easy. Some blogging, vlogging, YouTube's tips. First and foremost, just treat it like funsies. I think the critical issue that people do is essentially they, this is the problem with the YouTube's. I'll get the Injinji socks, the Vibram Five Fingers, some cheap merino wool leggings on Amazon's, Ruramon's, Eric Kim linen tank top, Muji down vest, sleeveless. Real men wear sleeveless. Okay, so the first thought is the purpose of this all is not to make the YouTubies monies with putting on ads. Okay, simple ethics, right? Don't do unto others as you don't like others to do unto you. So, okay, I don't know any human being on the planet who loves watching ads, who's like, oh wow, I'm so excited to watch an ad. Maybe besides like Super Bowl ads. I mean, Super Bowl ads are pretty entertaining, but even that, I'm like, I'd rather just be like out, you know, doing something better. And also my critique of video games, right? It's like you're playing like World of Warcraft or Diablo or any MMORPG whatevs, right? It's like, use the character and you're like killing all these monsters and bad guys, so right? But like, doesn't it just make more sense for you to just like become your own life superhero and get effing jacked, right? Like all this. And then I think also one of the big benefits is, especially once you got a kid, right, is life actually becomes a little bit simpler because you know the stupid BS to do, what not to do. So life is via negativas. Don't talk proper. Also some thoughts on doing a muscle up. Don't think of it like a muscle up, think of it like a muscle forward. A little bit difficult to describe, but just doing some personal trainings myself for funds. Everything in life should be for fun. Yeah. Real men use iPhone SEs. Okay, it's okay. One camera, one lens. The good thing with this, it's got one lens. Extra lenses. And even the iPads Pros. M1, no case, no stupid pencil, no stylus. Steve Jobs would be ashamed of you, Apple. Shame on you. So the big issue with weightlifters, bodybuilders, powerlifters, whatevs, right? Strongmen, whatevs. Fake ass steroid taking people's So the big issue here, oh wow. Look at that. Elon Musk quotes. Alright, so the big issue at hand is all these people's like pun, weightlifting belt, knee wraps. Like, via negativa, it's like A, it's cheaper to not buy a belt or knee wraps or wrist wraps, whatevs too. The true way to become stronger is you actually want to strengthen your sinews, your bones, your ligaments, etc. So the reason why I like the weightlifting rings, etc. So think about it this way from like a 3D perspective, right? 3D axis perspective, it could undulate all these different motions, twist around, so actually it's much more naturalistic to your joints. The big issue with most types of weightlifting, it's too much on just one axis, which causes injury because the motion doesn't allow for the undulations. And I think the undulation and then the dynamism of the 3D movement is actually a far superior way to quote warm up and whatevs. So other thoughts on doing the YouTubies and vlogger whatevs, right? Is first of all, don't label yourself nothing, right? When people say, I'm a creator or I'm an influencer or I'm a content creator, I'm like, now get out of here, right? Oh, wow. Better to just think of yourself like a big ass kid, curiosity, right? And also the big issue too is that like there's this weird American notion like curiosity killed the cat. And so in America, it's like people say curiosity and creativity is good, but actually it's not, especially in Asian cultures. It's like keep your head down, study, be a good worker, be a slave, and no freedoms. All right, some more funny thoughts. Wi-Fi is bad for your health. Wi-Fi is bad for your health. Even Sen knows how to say Wi-Fi, right? Even best friend Ye, he's like, what you mean, oxygen or Wi-Fi? So Wi-Fi is bad because it keeps your ass inside the house. You want to think off the grid? Maybe it's better to embrace the 5Gs. 5G, 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 4Gs, whatevs. Don't upgrade your home internet, upgrade your 5Gs. I mean, if I had it myself, I'd probably just get Verizon or, yeah, and don't even get a plan. Yeah. Invest in yourself, sucker. Whoa. What is this?
So in terms of what you want to become, right? So I kind of...
do want to become 2038. What do you want to become, question mark?
Don't use an alarm clock. All right, so.
Most influential person alive? What do you want to become? Most influential person alive. Okay. You're the will to simplicity and minimalisms. Yeah, just get the power squat rack bars. Figure it out later. Think Achilles. Fucking Ashen Spear. Become the goat. Okay. You. Bought me a jet. You. Philippe Patek. You. Get off my dick. That was a joke. Kill the orcs. Kill. Oxygen, oxygen, or Wi-Fi. Just keep it simple, silly. Keep it simple. Oh, okay. Lamborghini Mercy. so thirsty. In that juicy limbo with the ashtray. Remember. Just POV. POV. Eat it up. In terms of media creation strategy, comma, I really like this notion of POV, comma, point of view videos, period. GoPro mini chest mount, comma, ultra wide mode, comma, and just show people how you do things, period. For me, comma, my supreme curiosity is how other people do things, period. Seeing life behind the scenes, comma, how they do things in real life, comma, away from the screens, period. Paying somebody $20 an hour is a really good idea. Just paying somebody $20 an hour to do something is a really good idea. Let us say that you have a backyard full of junk and trash and you just literally want someone to throw it all into the dumpster, period. Instead of doing the hateful work yourself, comma, if you just hire somebody, comma, doesn't matter if illegal immigrant, comma, somebody from Mexico, comma, a broke college student, whatever, dot dot dot, to just hand them $20 USD in cash, comma, a Lincoln, comma, to spend a whole hour of their day and life to throw away the trash is a really good idea, period. $20 is interesting because nowadays, in today's world, comma, the $20 bill is almost like the new $1 bill or the new $5 bill, period. Let us consider... Let us consider that nowadays, comma, a single US dollar is not worth much, comma, a $1 piece of paper note is annoying to carry, period. $5 bills are a little bit more convenient, comma, but also people don't like to deal with change, period. $10 bills are rare, period. $20 bills are frequently dispensed at ATM machines, comma, and also, comma, consider how nobody ever has $50 bills, comma, maybe $100 bills, period. It seems in terms of cash money, comma, fiat currency, comma, the only US dollars being used frequently are the $20 bills or the $100 bills, period. For myself, whenever I go to a nice restaurant or whatever, comma, I always try to make it a point to give the server, comma, hand in hand, comma, in the flesh directly, comma, a $20 bill instead of some fake ass tip on a credit card, period. A $20 bill feels more real, period. Search Eric Kim on fiat currency. Fiat makes the question is this, Colin. Do you have faith in comma or value or respect that given currency question mark? For example, comma, I have faith in Bitcoin and Chainlink, comma, which is why I own both, period. In terms of fiat currency, comma, US dollars, comma, it is almost close to worthless to me, period. Granted, I just need to use my credit card or whatever in order to buy groceries and meat at Costco, comma, but besides that, dot, 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 the US dollar is worthless to me, period. Cindy and I have actually figured out, interestingly enough, comma, renting might be the most intelligent strategy today, comma, even if you were a billionaire or whatever, period. Why, question mark? I think you just live a better life because you spend less time thinking about renovating or upgrading your house, comma, buying furniture, comma, whatever, period. Also, comma, less maintenance and unexpected costs, period. Sooner or later, things are gonna break. I think the first thing I have witnessed about home ownership, comma, especially with my friends, family, Cindy's mom, whatever, comma, is that sooner or later things will break, comma, unexpectedly, period. The water heater, comma, the toilet plumbing is going to clog, comma, the roof has a hole in it, comma, $50,000 to fix the roof, comma, $10,000 to fix the water heater and plumbing and electricity, etc., period. Irregardless of how rich you are, comma, nobody likes to pay for these things, period. paying your rent in Bitcoin, question mark? Actually, comma, if I was a landlord, comma, I would be very, very happy to pay, accept rent money or payments in Bitcoin, exclamation point. Why, question mark? The promise that it will go up in the future, exclamation point. Bitcoin will never go to zero. Time to buy more Bitcoin, question mark? Search Eric Kim thoughts on Bitcoin. Search Eric Kim thoughts on Chainlink. Chainlink is not crypto, comma, neither is it a cryptocurrency. Search Eric Kim thoughts on Chainlink. What I find very fascinating about Chainlink is that ultimately, comma, it is not a crypto. Neither is it a cryptocurrency, period. Rather, comma, it is just a new technology, comma. I think Chainlink is just going to be the next Google, period. I mean, come on, comma. Just look at Eric Schmidt, comma. The guy who made Google into what it is today, period. He is on the board of trustees for Chainlink, comma, and I'm sure that he is personally owning a lot of Chainlink in his own personal account, period. Eric Schmidt interview with Sergei Nazarov.
Person. It's excellent.
I'm truly honored to be joined here by Eric Schmidt, you know, one of the people that has formed how the web has evolved and how our society uses the internet today. So very grateful to Eric for coming here to speak with us. Thank you very much for sharing your views and being part of helping us see how to make Web3 a bigger part of society. Thank you. I'm going to jump right into it to make sure we can make the most of our time together. You've seen a lot of things. You've seen how the world has evolved. And so I think you have a very astute view of, you know, patterns and how the world changes. What I really want to understand is, How did you come to the idea that Web3 is attractive? What attracts you to Web3? What are the fundamental value that you see being provided by Web3?
Well, it's hard to tell the truth, and I'm historically a skeptic. And I'm a skeptic because although I like the beliefs and the values and the technology, I think the marketing got a little ahead of reality, which is okay. It's not the first, I mean, in the waves I've been in, this has happened every time. And let's start with the basic principles that Web3 and the work that you're doing is essentially trustless, immutable, and distributed. And those principles are really powerful for computer systems. That's why many of you got involved. And I looked at it and I thought, I frankly just don't think it'll become big enough. And then you and a couple of other people started talking to me, and I think you were one of the inventors of this, about this basically a really crazy idea. Sorry, it's your idea.
It's fine, I'm crazy, I'm on board with
it. I think it's established. And so layer one I understood, but the concept of layer two, where you use tokens to incentivize behavior, was a really powerful development in the last, say, 3 years, 4 years, roughly when you started. And that changes the economics in some really fun ways. And I think this is a case where you all, people in the audience, are ahead of the academics, the economists who understand this. And a simple way to understand this is that, so you and I do, this is not going to happen because you're busy doing this company, you and I do a new company. And we decide to have a new coin. So layer one I understood, but the concept of layer two, where you use tokens to incentivize behavior, was a really powerful development in the last, say, 3 years, 4 years, roughly when you started. And that changes the economics in some really fundamental ways. And I think this is a case where you all, people in the audience, are ahead of the academics, the economists who understand this. And a simple way to understand this is that, so you and I do, this is not going to happen because you're busy doing this company, you and I do a new company, and we decide to have a new coin. And the coin is initially relatively worthless. Maybe I'll see you. and its value increases directly with demand. Now, in my whole career, I have always had compensation tied to stock options, which was tied to corporate wealth and so forth. But the token, the fact that the token goes up in value based on network effects, is a real discovery. And I don't think people understand quite the economics of this. I was talking to one founder who curiously wouldn't tell me his actual name. He had a code name. God knows why. And you never know. And I said, well, how do we do, you know, I'm used to investing things. And you work so much, I get so much. How much do you want? He said, oh, we already know the answer. I said, well, how much do I get? He said, 20% of the tokens. And I said, good. How much do you get? 18% of the tokens. What goes everyone else? He said, well, we need 30% of the tokens to stake the necessary network, to get the network working, get the validators on. We need about 100 validators. You've heard this speech before. Many of your chains operate this. And I said, how do you, I'm used to negotiating this. And he goes, I said, how do you know this? He said, oh, there's a paper. This has been thoroughly studied. And he sends me the paper, right? So this economic structure is actually much more interesting than you all appreciate. It's a new way of tying compensation and incentives to network scale. That's a big deal.
I agree. I think it is a very big deal, and I think you're definitely getting to the core of the matter on that one. So how do you see?
But take some credit. I mean, this is actually like me.
It's okay.
It's okay.
So come on. I take a credit in a decade or two when everything's running on Web3. Then we'll. Until then, I'm gonna.
Did I hear a forecast? Okay. So let me just continue. So first you have the layer ones, then you have the various layer twos, and the layer two provides all the necessary services. And now you have a problem of cross-chain, right? Which is something Chainlink works on pretty well. And you have all of the problems of centralized systems in a distributed context, because
we're able to create that type of decentralization in a very explicit way, rather than a dynamic membership way that creates these large mining pools.
And my overall point is, I think that you just described a whole new industrial system. It's not very well understood outside of this room.
Once again, very much in agreement with you. Kind of uncanny how you're getting to the core of the issue, having that you've arrived very recently, but it's really quite, I mean, recently to the conference now, to the industry.
But recently to the industry too.
Okay, well then, it's very impressive, and it's amazing. I mean, the guy's getting to the core of the issue, and like...
So what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do to fix it?
I actually see more and more computation moving into Oracle networks, because blockchains don't fulfill the scalability or privacy properties. And if they fulfill those properties, then that's fine. That computation can go there. But I think in terms of stage where they won't fulfill those requirements. And so there needs to be a bridge, just like blockchains couldn't fulfill the requirement of providing data. You know, there are all these requirements that you have to build more advanced applications to really realize Web3. And all those requirements are really what Oracle networks seek to fulfill. Some of them will fall away and go into, you know, a blockchain, but many of them won't. It's just not very easy to predict which requirements will fall away and which won't. But we're building a pretty flexible system that provides data, identity, you know, randomness, a cross-chain soon, all these things. So, I mean, that's my plan to solve it, is to basically plug all the holes. And then the holes that are left are probably very valuable holes to keep filled. And that's where I think the value will land in that decade, half decade time series.
So in the spirit of full disclosure, I'm the chairman of a woman named Michelle Ritter founded a company called Steel Perlow, which I'm now the chairman, and she's the CEO. And she designed a structure where you do fundraising for funds that generate cash that goes into startups, and the startups are going to go into global financial systems based on these principles. So I decided to put my money and other people's money, you know, into this space. I think that your vision is correct. I'm a little bit more skeptical. I keep reading all of these claims that Web3 is going to take down Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and so forth. Having lived through that, I think that's pretty unlikely. And I think what you're going to ultimately see, and I want to be very clear, is you're going to see, let's use the generic term Web2, Web3. You're going to see Web2 used in cases where you don't need the trustlessness, and you can get the decentralization through centralization, right? And centralization of power, which is how those companies work. And so I think the more likely scenario is you're going to see the traditional web stuff, Web2 stuff. But if you need something which is trustless, decentralized, right, and immutable, you're going to have very, very powerful systems. If you look at zero knowledge proofs and the development of that, which is like it's been under development for a very long time, that will enable a completely new way in which you validate financial transactions. And part of the Chainlink vision is basically cryptographic truth is always the right answer. So your religion, if I can say it, is don't trust the human, trust the protocol. So roughly what to say it. So that is a scalable model if you can get the technology to scale. And that's likely a major contribution to the computer architecture going forward.
Yeah, I think so. I think at the end of the day, people's faith in mathematics is going to end up being stronger than their faith in institutions and brands and other people, because the tendency to fail them will be an extremely low percentage, whereas the tendency that humans and institutions and brands run by humans, those things will continue to, very unfortunately, they will continue to fail. And there'll be periods where they fail very little, and there'll be periods where they fail in, you know, very rapid succession in big ways, like in the 2008 financial crisis. And, you know, I would rather be building a system that's going to reconstruct the world in a reliable, guaranteed way than
trying to. What you have is you have an opportunity in addition to. So one way to think about what you're doing in Web3 is you're trying to recreate all the practices that exist in current cloud services, but in a decentralized platform. That's one way to think about your strategy. And to me, the most interesting question are, what are the new services that are not easily done today in cloud? Right? I mean, there's a straightforward list in cloud, right? Because the cloud stuff just replaced the stuff I used to do before cloud existed, right? So it's file services, scheduling invocation, you know, figuring out how to run services and so forth and so on. There will eventually be some sort of Ethereum zero knowledge virtual machine. Today, the smart contracts are pretty, poor in their capabilities. And that functionality should get there because of all the research that's being done in the industry. To me, the question is, what can you then do that you can't do today? One of the most obvious things is doing distributed analytics over these kinds of decentralized systems. Because when you talk to the banks, they roughly, in some cases, know what's going on in their own banking system, but they have no idea what the other ones. And when you talk to the banking regulators, they have no visibility into anything. So imagine a system where you have extremely good analytics that are cross-chain, and these bankers can actually say, holy crap, you know, we're just about to have a crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is basically the world that we all want to be in, because the cyclical booms and busts that just keep getting bigger and bigger are basically based on people not having access. Let's forget even about regulators. It's even the credit rating agencies and all these people that are supposed to be experts and supposed to get access to the siloed information. I mean, that's the fundamental reason for most of these big cyclical boom and busts in developed markets.
Where would AI approach? And I've mostly been working on AI stuff. Once you have the data, just think of the generative design, the sort of analytics. And we can talk about this if you're interested in it. But you know, the eventual vision is a new set of apps that allow you to manage the system better. We were struck with in 2008, 2009, that there were no uncorrelated assets. Right. Well, that's something that should be easily discoverable. Right. by your own technology running on the top of the things that you're building.
Yeah, makes sense. I personally don't know exactly how AI is going to interact with blockchains. My view on it is skeptical, as you put it. I actually think that I've watched a bunch of these sci-fi shows, you know, like Westworld and all these things. I don't really think it's going to be that bad, frankly. But I think that private keys, the interesting thing about the Westworld show was actually the whole show is about getting access to a private key that gives access to like this other system. So basically, even if you have AI, maybe you still have encryption as a limiting factor. And then guess what system does really complex programmatic encryption? All right, it's blockchains, right? So maybe that can be a kind of good guardrail or good limitation to whatever fears people have about AI, is they can institute certain private key measures that can't be surpassed. So I have that skeptical view on that.
I think that's a fine belief system. We'll see if that actually happens. I think the most important thing to know is that you're going to be able to do computations on the equivalent of blockchains layer one, layer two, using homomorphic encryption and zero knowledge proofs. So you will be able to analyze these things without necessarily getting into trouble.
Absolutely. I can't wait till they make that efficient. That's going to be a big deal, very big deal.
Absolutely. But look, we made some progress with the shift from proof of work to proof of stake. So incredibly important. And I think these changes are really good signs that your industry is getting its act together from the standpoint of computer science, right? Because computer scientists have known about these limitations for a very long time, and we've all complained about them, while some people have actually worked hard to get those things fixed.
So how do you see Web2 systems interacting with Web3 systems? Are Web2 systems the trusted interfaces, and Web3 systems are the trustless state storage and transactional backends? How does Web2 interface with Web3 in the long term?
Well, let me give you another example. Let's assume for purposes of argument that you're going to use the Web3 system through Android and iPhone. And by the way, it's in that way. Is the phone itself a Web2 system? And I think it is, because it's... Yeah. It has traditional authentication, traditional computation, traditional rules about access to apps, and so forth. So I could imagine obstacles to using digital cash right now. You have to physically move a credit card. You have to physically open your phone, all that kind of stuff. This is in the Web2 world. The goal would be to make digital cash, broadly speaking, completely seamless. Right? And that's a reasonable goal for the next 5 to 10 years. And it's clearly coming. And the regulators will, I mean, if you, just as a minute on regulators, you don't want, so be careful for those of you who have not dealt with regulators, don't ask for regulation early, please. I've done this now for 45 years. No, 47. Sorry, I was doing a little math. You don't want premature regulation. You want these systems to get built so people can understand what the really hard problems are, and then you want to figure out what problems they cause. Now, right now, it's important to understand that many of you would prefer not to have any regulation at all. Welcome to being a libertarian. And societies don't reward libertarian thinking very much because of all the issues around power and control and so on and so on. It's highly unlikely that a purely libertarian view of how these things are going to emerge is going to work. What instead is going to happen is governments will assert their authority, partly because that's what they do, and you want to do it in such a way that it's rational. And today, for example, in the United States, it's not at all clear who the regulatory bodies are going to be. Right? They're still thinking about it. They're still talking about it. Is it an asset that is regulated by the CFTC? How do we deal with AML, KYC issues, and so forth? These are real issues. But my overall message is, for those of you that are working with regulators, take it slow, right? Get the regulation right. And it's very, very hard to get the regulation right in such that it prevents the bad things but allows all of the good things. It's really a difficult knife edge to be on.
makes perfect sense.
And I have lived this. I have done this for the last 30 years, and I might have to do this again.
Someone else can live through it. I'm just going to build all this stuff. People are going to build cool things. That's our plan.
Yeah, you know, likely story.
Yeah. We don't make financial products. We don't do
anything. But understand that you're successful enough that you're on somebody's list.
I understand. So, thank you so much. In your experience, in the way that the Web 2 infrastructure evolved, right, where it evolved from larger closed systems to smaller and smaller pieces being combined as service-oriented architecture and then microservices, do you see a similar dynamic happening from the point of view of, Web 3, and that, it'll end up becoming smaller and smaller pieces that get composed into those more complex Web 2 applications? And by the way, on the point on Web 2 and Web 3, I personally don't think it matters if the user relationships are retained by a lot of Web 2 applications necessarily, because the fundamental value will flow through those interfaces into Web 3 backend systems.
Okay. I agree with you in an optimistic scenario. It's perfectly possible that the Web 2 companies will decide that you're having too much fun making too much money, and that they will actually put in regulations of their own. Right, so this is it's trickier than it sounds.
So a note of caution on Web 2. And by the way, when we were doing this, we didn't call it Web 2. We just called it the web. What happened, let's see if I can describe it. We all started with a notion of true decentralization, true empowerment of individuals. All of the things that I did 25 years ago involving Mosaic, internet, HTML, all this kind of stuff was presumed at the fact that the world become disaggregated, that everyone had equal access, all this stuff, all that religion stuff. We believed it, and I really believed it. And if you look at the structure today of what you think, it's highly concentrated around relatively proprietary systems. And that's not what we started off in. So if you look at it in the arc of my career over 20 years, the same thing could happen to you. And you go, oh my God, that would be terrible. But let me tell you how it might happen. I mean, this is not a prediction. There are economic benefits and returns to scale. And you have really clever entrepreneurs who are very, very smart. They're moving quickly. They create value, and they can begin to merge and acquire things, right? And there are also technical benefits to centralization. Because of the Sybil effect, the truly distributed systems spend the vast majority, estimates are up to 90% of their time, making sure there isn't an interloper in the protocol, right? So that's, and there are technical solutions to that. So you've got a system where it spends an awful lot of time making sure there aren't other people around. It's perfectly possible that that could lead to a small number of high-end, large players. So I don't think Web3 is immune from the kind of centralization that surprised me. Now, I was also one of the people who caused it, so I'm not trying to be mislead you. But the economic incentives, the scale incentives, and the technology incentive itself tend to favor centralization. So one thing for you all to do is to make a map of what you think of Web3 will be, and then figure out which points will be centralized, which points will be regulated, and which ones will be wide open. The history of technology is they start completely wide open, and then there are centralizers, there are consolidators. There is probably a set of consolidators that will get either built, founded, or will come into the space and provide that to some of the infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand what you're saying in terms of economies of scale and efficiency. And I think back to your earlier point of mining pools, that, you know, that's an example of the efficiency of a mining pool attracting a lot of hash power into, you know, a single entity that's then, you know, probably through some backroom social convention kept at, you know, 25% or something. But I really think that the difference in Web3 is that it's about creating open markets for those compute workloads, for all of that, right? So the success of a protocol for me isn't that it it centralizes the value of the compute or the control in one group, like a mining pool. It's that it successfully creates a market where people efficiently bid against each other to create more efficiency, more security, often through some form of formalized reputation. So I think the real difference is that, yes, those big companies could get, you know, better deals on hardware, bigger, better deals on data centers, better deals on cooling, better deals on human capital, better deals on a bunch of things. But I think the real question is that if you make a market, how does that market evolve when all you need is very proven inputs, very proven uptime? And that's what I think Web3 reputation systems really do. There's actually a very poor name for them as reputation systems, because Web2 reputation systems fundamentally suck. Because an intern can make a 5-star review and everyone now has 5-star reviews. But Web3 reputation systems, together with the market, can become efficient. Does that make sense?
They do, until you have an evil actor. Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you an example. So I spent, I don't know, a decade of my life fighting Microsoft at the heyday of its consolidation, including antitrust, 1996, 1997, all this kind of stuff. And Microsoft's tactics at the time, they don't do this anymore, included not allowing competitor access to the platforms, various pricing strategies, all of which were subject to antitrust rules, all of which has been discussed at length by my generation. So the internet comes along, and Cisco, for a while, had more than 50% of control over the net. But Cisco didn't use the same business tactics as Microsoft. And I kept wondering why. Now, partly it's because it's different people, different leadership, but also because it was a protocol network incentive as opposed to an app control incentive, if you see the distinction. So to the degree that your observation is about network scale and protocol, you won't end up being dominated or taken over by a private player. In other words, you're going to be to the degree that somebody can come in with significant money, significant network power, and change the protocol to exclude competitors. Then you'll have trouble. And again, you have a model of Web3 as protocol network based, obviously I like that a lot. I would be very careful in the design of those future layer 2 or whatever is called layer 3 protocols to make sure that they fully affect and realize the vision you outlined.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's definitely a challenge, but I think we can formalize that, and it's all going to happen pretty openly, and so that I think that can create those bring us back to those positive market dynamics.
It's interesting, in your world and the people that I talk with, I'll use my kind of language, which I must seem old to them. And my kind of language is, you know, gaining market share, dominance, and so forth. And they say, well, that's not appropriate. So that's a different generation of leaders and a different set of language. So the question is, when it's not appropriate, but it's in someone's financial incentive to do it, will they change their mind? And I don't think we know yet.
I think it's appropriate. We are the standard for oracles, and we dominate that market because we make the best system. Totally comfortable with that. You guys good with that? I'm good with it.
But you've done it in such a way that you haven't excluded your competitors. You haven't killed anybody.
No, I haven't killed anybody. Just, I'm not that crazy yet. Yet. I haven't got there yet. But if we'll see. Talk to me in a few years. If it keeps going at this pace, who knows? Just kidding.
I think it's messing. Basic. It's basically because you run the whole company on Zoom, and Zoom will kill you.
Somebody's.
Maybe you should have some in-person meetings.
I'll think about it.
We've had this conversation privately before.
I'll definitely think about it. We're not planning to kill anybody. Just so we're on the same page. It's not the plan. Great. So this all adds up. In terms of, you know, infrastructure and how it needs to evolve, how do you see Oracle's fitting into that infrastructure? How do you see infrastructure in Web3 kind of evolving generally? Are there any lessons from Web2 that really explain how at kind of the infrastructure level, not at the app layer, not at the interface layer, but, and I know we kind of already discussed this, but.
At the end of the day, the companies that won in Web2 were better technology, they put more capital to work, and they moved faster, and they scaled faster. And in these, and these are network businesses, so once you get a little bit ahead, it's very hard to catch up to the person ahead of you. Now, in your case, because you were early and very smart, obviously, you got in there first. So you see it from the standpoint of the person who's ahead. So I think that, that in Web3, you're going to see the same dynamic, right, of new things entering. And the winners, and I think this is absolutely true of Chainlink, they have better technology, as you said, and it scales better. That's, I'm now speaking as a computer scientist. You've got to get the architecture right so you... computation, right? So, for example, the time, the DNS that you use is almost certainly the Google DNS, right? Google, roughly a third of the world's internet traffic goes through, that's still the number, through Google Fiber. You would never know that. Now, all, are these gifts to the world? Yes, thank you very much. But they were also in our direct financial interest because it meant that we knew what was going on.
Yeah, having a piece of computation, of every computation, is a good idea. I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that plan. It's a solid plan.
Yes. Is there any particular reason why you can't just announce that that's your plan right now to your customers? We want everyone here to have a piece of Chainlink in everything that you do.
That's the plan. As long as we provide the security you need and the systems that you need, we should win on that basis, and if we provide the most secure, best system for you to build your application, then we should absolutely have the ability to provide that compute to Web3. I think that's exactly right. That's the standard we'll need to meet, and that's the standard Google met very, very impressively, and that's just kind of, you know, at certain size and speed, the name of the game. So I think that's, once again, thank you for getting to the core of the issue, for telling everybody my plan.
Oh, I'm sorry, was that private?
I was just talking about it for like an hour. No. Cool, so I think this makes a lot of sense. Is there anything in particular that attracted you to working with us, working on Oracles, that you see Oracles playing a particularly important role in infrastructure, separate from the others?
When we first were chatting, you were talking about Oracle, and I thought you were talking about a company. So
I'm interested in creating a different Oracle.
Got it. Well, that's definitely what we're doing. That's definitely what we're doing. Very much so. Okay, great. So I think a lot of this adds up. You know, the final questions that I have are kind of just around how should people be thinking about joining the Web3 industry. You know, there's been a lot of ups and downs in Web3. It's obviously a very cyclical market. People might be wondering, should they build applications in Web3? Should they take their career into Web3? Obviously, it's very cyclical. The cycles are also very rapid. They're about twice to three times as rapid as Web2 or traditional cycles. How do you think people should be?
Well, let me ask the audience. Are we going to have a recession in the next 12 months in the U.S.? The guys over here are in favor of it. Okay, over here you're in favor of it too. Do you know why a recession would be good for all of us? It would get labor prices down, right? So, and I'm not endorsing recessions, trust me. I would answer the question by saying, first, I think we make our own weather in our industry. We make our own economics. And the way you win is you build a product that solves a real problem, and you do it now, and it takes off. So if you're in a downturn, it's the same message as if you're going well, right? A downturn is easier to hire because people become more labor available, and their demands for compensation and so forth become more realistic. But it's the same rule, right? You're trying to build a product that's a breakout product, right? And I have historically ignored, as a matter of business, what's going on in the public markets. The tech industry has always had lots of capital because of software. There's infinite amounts of money to invest. The valuations that are being raised in this cycle are still high relative to normal metrics. If you look at AI, which I'm going to spend most of my time on, the next generation of startups are being raised at $200 million kind of valuations with 10 people and no product. It's just insane stuff. Thank God the capital markets can provide that kind of capital for this generation of founders. So I'm not at all worried for us. I'm worried about the globe. I'm worried about war. I'm worried about food. I'm worried about gas prices. I'm worried about all that. But for our true memory, it's not normal. We're not normal. We have our own ecosystem. Sorry.
Then I'm not less for sure.
So, you and I especially, we have our own structure. So my advice would be, when I was, if you all do understand, when I was in college, there was an article that said, we have too many engineers in our country, and we won't ever need any more. And I, of course, was majoring in electrical engineering, because computer science didn't exist. And I remember thinking, well, that's a bummer. But I didn't change what I was doing. And of course, the article, as usual, was completely wrong. But my point here is, as a matter of your life's choice, right, because, you know, life is short and it's over fairly quickly, figure out what you really want to work on and do something which is exceptional. If you're doing something which is exceptional with a team that you love, what are you complaining about? Right? That's the best of life.
Eric, I want to thank you for, you know, your inspirational ideas. It's been truly a pleasure speaking with you. It's always my immense pleasure to speak with you whenever I have a chance. I'm going to be contacting you ceaselessly to speak with you even more. And
let's just say congratulations to you all for ending up in the right spot in the Web3 space, working with Chainlink. Thank you very much. Thank you.
purpose, which is to create better futures for our people, our customers, our shareholders, and the communities. What we think about blockchain is that it adds a lot of value, and not just by itself, but even more so when we combine it with other technologies, such as digital identities, such as AI, such as and that's where we believe it starts to shine. We see blockchain as a huge technology, but if you think about it, it's not a new technology. It's got its roots in 1980s nested lists in Europe with them. And on the other hand, if you think about the new real time domestic payment systems that we have in Australia and we have in some other countries, they are much newer and really exciting based on technologies that have been implemented. So comparing to them, blockchain is a new legacy. Now, if we think about the market dynamics, what we feel is that is about finding the right balance between the value proposition for our customers and the risks that we need to manage to keep it safe and secure. What are the use cases? I think this is the core of our job, where
Mm-hmm.